You are listening to Bicycle Retail Radio, brought to you by the National Bicycle Dealers Association.
Hi, everyone. This is John Robinson from the National Bike Dealers Association, and I want to thank you for coming here today and listening to a very good podcast I think is going to be informative for you, working with transgender people in your shop as employees or customers. We have a great panel here today. Before we get started, I wanted to encourage everyone, we're kind of like public radio. Yes, we do rely on donations and basically in the form of memberships. So if you're not an NBDA member, please consider doing that because that's how we're able to put on these podcasts and provide some of the other resources as an organization that help benefit your business. So please go to mbda.org if you'd like to become a member or have questions about memberships. And with that said, what we're going to go ahead and do here is I will go ahead and introduce our first panelist, Stephanie Lenzo. Stephanie, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi there. I'm a Columbus native, Columbus, Ohio native. I enjoy biking. I bike on trails around here. I bike to work. And I met John in his shop a couple of years ago and have been visiting him every couple of weeks ever since.
Great. And Stephanie, what pronouns do you go by?
I go by she, her.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Otto. Otto, I'll go ahead and have you introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Otto, and I own Spoken Bicycles in Middletown, Ohio. We've been open about 4.5 years, and we are a full-service bike shop that also features a craft beer and cocktail bar in it. And
oh, that's a dream.
And yeah, I do basically everything from mechanic to salesperson to bartender.
Nice. Lastly, we have Dante Escuza. Dante?
Yeah, my name's Dante. I've been in the bike industry going on about 25 years now. Just recently came out last year as a woman, so my pronouns are she, her. I'm still kind of early in the process and finding my way.
And what do you do at the bike shop, Dante?
I'm a service manager, so I've been a service manager probably going on about 12 years now.
Great, great. Glad to hear. So we have a customer, a shop owner, and then an employee, a service manager at the local bike shop here. So just introduce myself as well. I'm John Robinson. I'm the owner of Johnny Vela Bikes in Columbus, Ohio, and I'm also a board member and chairperson of the DEI committee, which is Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. With that, I'm going to go ahead and just kind of open it a little bit here. By the way, my pronouns are he, him. What does transgender mean to each one of you? And then what do you think it kind of means to the public? And Stephanie, before we talked, you kind of had an interesting thing you point out to me. Transgender is more of an adjective. And we refer to transgender people. So could you give a little explanation of what it means to you?
Transgender, it means to me that I'm happier this way than I was before. Like, I was not very happy with myself as a boy, whether that's fate or God's will or whatever. That's just how it is. That's really just what it means to me, is that I'm happier in my own skin now than I was then.
Okay, wonderful. Otto?
Definitely along those same lines. I mean, what most people probably know of, you don't identify with your assigned gender when you were born. For me personally, I knew when I was 4 years old that I wasn't happy or just felt like I was supposed to be a boy. I was in my early 30s until I finally learned myself, you know, that I was transgender and had the strength and everything to finally transition. And I'm so much happier now. Kind of living as I am and very comfortable.
Great. And Dante, you've recently transitioned. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that experience for you?
It's pretty unique in the fact that I'm 49, so I'm coming out as what people tend to refer to as a late bloomer. So, but yeah, it's finally not having to repress all those feelings from the past. You know, this has been going on in my entire life, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, being able to be myself is probably the most liberating thing about being in it, you know, feeling the same feelings that Stephanie and Otto felt coming out. So.
Sure.
It really is liberating. Like, I know people who are like, I didn't transition when I was 14 years old, so I'm going to be ugly and gross for the rest of my life, you know? Like, it's not true at all. Like, Dante, there are people that have transitioned in their 90s.
Right.
Grandpas and grandmas. Yep. So, like, good for you. It's absolutely awesome. It's never too late to be yourself.
Right. Oh, definitely.
That's a very good point, Stephanie. Thank you. How do you, each one of you, I guess, have to deal with people that don't understand your decisions? I want to use an example. One of the people that I'd been talking to recently, that's a transgender person, talked about they were an avid mountain biker. And they would go out to very rural areas in small towns to mountain bike in some beautiful areas. But often those towns might have one place to eat. And as a transgender person, there was a sense of security or safety, for example, that was very heightened for them. Is that something each one of you feel on a daily basis, or is it not so often, or not at all? I'm just trying to get people to understand a little bit more of what that's like.
Yes and no. It really depends on the kind of people that I interact with and the places I am. Because, like, I don't know if I want to say I'm very unique, but there are things about my transition that I just don't care about. Like my voice, for example. Like a lot of trans women like to do voice, like what's called voice training. Like I just haven't bothered because it doesn't bother me personally. And that tends to quote unquote give me away, I guess, end quote. If I'm like in like a, I don't want to be like Upper Arlington or some very rich, white, and old part of town, sometimes I will feel a little unsafe. But like around here, around Clintonville and Central Columbus, like it's a lot. It's a big difference. It's like, I don't want to say night and day. Like I used to live in, if you're familiar with this place called Pataskala, it's essentially an apple farm and cornfields. My high school was literally in the middle of two cornfields. That's not a joke. I didn't even think about transitioning there, not only because I was ignorant about what it was, but if I wasn't ignorant about what it was at the time, I would get the crap kicked out of me at my high school, like, because country bumpkins, they just don't understand, and some of them don't really care to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it just really depends on the circumstance.
Okay.
I've had discussions with my therapist, but for me, a lot of it was just finding safe spaces. So obviously this is going to be audio and the audience isn't going to be able to see me, but I'm a person of color. So I have that going as another thing on top of being a transgender woman, on top of things, you know, just something for me that I worried about quite a bit. So
sure.
Things like when you go on a vacation, it's like, does this rest area have a gender neutral bathroom? You know, just goofy things like that. I don't know what's going to happen. It's, you know, but through therapy and just talking it out, I mean, it's still in the back of my head, but it's always something I have to look out for just because of my situation. I've gotten used to it. It's an ongoing process, but I feel like I'm comfortable with it now, especially being around, you know, finding friends and supporters. I'm not as skittish as I used to be, I guess.
Yeah. Do you find people, for the most part, are kind about it or afraid or just curious?
It's weird because, you know, coming out of the pandemic, being around other people for a long time, you know, for all of last year, I was basically just seeing customers or being at home. Finally took a couple vacations, but they're out of state. So a lot of people don't know me. So I have kind of this, I always called it like my force field of anonymity because, like Stephanie said, you know, she didn't want to change her voice. For me, it's a weird thing where I like to joke about it. My therapist and I just giggle every time I say it, but I call myself a 10-foot woman. I look like a woman from 10 feet away. But when you get closer, I can kind of tell people are reading me. But
okay. So
far, everyone's been pretty kind. It was surprising to me how people just not, you know, brought it up or made it a big deal or, you know,
Good.
Anything like that. So,
you know, you were in my shop recently and you came in and you actually had a she, her button.
Yes.
On your shirt too. That was very helpful. So no one wants to go around with a button having to explain who they right. are or anything like that. But I've known you as a man before you've transitioned right. now to a woman. And so even before we had the call, I said, okay, guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, I can't say that, you know, but it's helpful. So let me ask you a question. And maybe, Otto, you could answer this for me. What happens if you're out in public and someone gets your gender wrong or your pronouns wrong? What's the best way handle that?
Personally, you know, I'm very fortunate that I pass really no problem. I can't say I get misgendered at all anymore.
Okay.
So it's not something really that I have to deal with myself. I'm 6 feet tall. When I started transitioning, even before I started hormones, I'd cut my hair and basically people just automatically were like, thought I was a guy. I feel like very fortunate that I don't really have to deal with that now. You know, there's always going to be like, I still don't like, you know, going into bathrooms or would prefer gender neutral bathrooms. It's not an issue, but it's just like personally, it's like you're just hesitant sometimes. But I know I'm pretty lucky that, you know, it's not really a question anymore for me.
I can definitely speak about the bathroom thing. I've had bad times. I've had people not question me inside the bathroom, but I've had people like point at me as I come out.
Okay.
And it's just like, oh, it's just like, oh, that woman's talking to my manager about how I'm using the women's restroom. That makes me feel wonderful.
No, okay. Even in your own workplace, you're experiencing it from how customers react to you while you're at work.
It doesn't happen to me anymore. Well, most of the time. So I definitely dress and act like a butch lesbian because I am one. So it doesn't really bother me when I get he-hemmed because most of the time I'm wearing like a big puffy coat and like I don't give a crap about my voice. So it's just like it's a coin flip whether someone gets my gender right or wrong. In the past, it definitely used to bother me a lot more. And I would specifically, I talked to my therapist at the time and she was like, you need to correct people. And I corrected people and they were like, oh, I'm sorry. That's how you build the self-confidence to eventually not care anymore.
Sure.
That's been my experience.
As a business owner, if I have a customer come in and I think I get a person's pronouns wrong and I say, oh, no, I'm sorry, should I correct myself? Let it go?
You should, at least in my opinion, because there's
ask.
Yeah, there's a really fine line because I feel like if you ask people's pronouns, people get really weird about it. Specifically, cis people get really weird about it. They feel almost offended that you would have to, like, oh, you have to ask? They get really, like, I don't want to use the term butthurt, but they get very upset at you. I don't want to say clock people, but if you don't know someone's gender, just ask. But be prepared for if they're a cis person, just be prepared for them to be like, how dare you? And I know that doesn't happen 99% of the time.
Right.
But, you know, the 1% of the time it does, it can be pretty, like, not fun to deal with, if that makes sense.
Could you explain for the people listening here, too, what a cis person is?
So, cis and trans are the opposites of each other. Cis, I'm probably going to get this wrong, cis and trans in chemistry. Cis means the molecule is all on one side. Trans means it's half and half, I believe. That's probably totally wrong. That thanks, high school chemistry class.
Right.
They come from Latin roots, but cisgender means that they are the gender they were assigned at birth. So, like, for example, my dad, he is not transgender. He is cisgender. He was born a boy. He's okay with being a boy.
Sure.
And I am transgender because I have transed my gender. I have changed my gender. Sure. I was born a boy and I'm not anymore.
Okay. Dante, how do you handle it at work?
My therapist was really key in helping me. Is I've been working on keeping my conversations with customers as gender neutral as possible. So like, you know, in the beginning, you know, you caught yourself saying guys, you know, I was terrible at that. I would always refer to everyone as guys. So now it's folks or, you know, how are y'all? Y'all is a popular one, I guess. And when it happens, you know, if I get misgendered, like the big thing with me and being misgendered, I guess it's my inner circle I hold to a different standard than total strangers. If I get misgendered by a total stranger, I'm not going to get crazy or anything like that. But if it's in a situation where I'm able to correct them, or like, you know, if we're having a conversation or if they've met me for the first time, I'll correct them. And then what I really expect are my closest, you know, people in my inner circle to get it right. You know, I get disappointed if they misgendered me. I still misgender myself half the time.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a work in progress. Like my therapist said, I'm basically retraining my thought from years of calling myself one thing.
I had now the same experience.
Having to undo that. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain, but trying to be really cognizant of all the words coming out of your mouth is quite the feat. So, but I practice when I'm watching TV or something. I'm like, oh, they are pretty cool to watch. Or, you know, it's just a lot of practicing with things.
Now, Dante and Steph, both of you are employees. You work for people that own other businesses. Have they been comfortable in accommodating with you?
Depends. Really depends. So my previous job, I worked at Jimmy John's with my partner, my then partner, who was also trans. The owners were two gay guys. So yes, in that case, yes. That wasn't my most previous job, but that was my second previous job, I guess. Two gay guys, not two gay guys anymore, apparently. But that's a whole different conversation. So yeah, I was treated very well there, at least in terms of gender stuff, not in terms of working a job stuff. They scheduled me 3 hours a week, cough, cough. It really depends. Like, I worked at Kroger. I was treated like junk, just garbage. One of my coworkers trapped me in a corner, not like literally, but like we were picking bananas together. And she kind of like moved her cart in me so I couldn't escape. And she was like, don't you worry about being a she demon or some completely like lunatic nonsense like that. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? It made me deeply uncomfortable. I would get called slurs. Like a guy in produce would call me, hey, I'm not going to repeat the slurs. But, like, I would get called, like, hard slurs. Like, slurs that people don't use for trans people. I haven't used those words since, like, the 80s.
So, like, your employer basically didn't provide you or the other employees with the tools they need to make you feel safe.
No. Even the union lead. I have IBS, like, really severe IBS. Horrible, awful disease. And I would miss work a lot because of it. The union boss had the audacity to be like, it's probably the hormones you're taking. That's why you have IBS. And I was like, you're insane. What are you talking about? That's not how medicine works. It's a crapshoot. If you get like a small business where the people there are working with each other and they care, yeah, it can be perfectly fine. If you don't, then you're just playing the lottery of, oh, am I going to get treated like a human being, or am I going to get treated like a third-class citizen?
Sorry you had to go through that.
That's okay. I got unemployment because I quit because they completely neglected COVID guidelines as well. So I had no hard feelings.
Okay. Dante, how about you?
First of all, Roll has been super supportive.
Good.
When I came out. It's funny because the way it came out was my GM started putting his pronouns in his email signatures. So sneaky me snuck my pronouns in there. And then it just kind of filtrated, you know, through the company as I sent emails out. You know, my GM approached me, asked me about it, wanted to show his support, asked me if this was a thing that we were going to, if I was going to come out to the company. So one of the things that to be polite to a transgender person is to not out them if you know they're out. So my manager knew I was out, so he wasn't going to just go ahead and tell everybody I was out. So I made that announcement myself. So, and I got personal emails and personal texts from, you know, the owner, our COO, other people in the company. I'm not saying everyone in the company agrees with me, but the outpouring of support, it was nice. It made me feel safe to know that I wasn't working somewhere that like Stephanie's Kroger situation wasn't going to be hostile,
right?
For as long as I've been doing this, I really didn't want to leave. So, but yeah, it turned out great. It's really nice to be able to go to work and not worry about things like that. So,
Otto, you're a business owner.
Yes.
So, like myself here, have you had the opportunity to work with other LGBTQ transgender people within your business? Or,
you know, I can't say I really have since I've had spoken open. You know, Middletown's a pretty, I mean, it's not a huge city, but definitely in more of a red area. But I was able to help start our like first Pride event in Middletown. Now we've had three or four of the past few years. And, you know, so I've been able to be involved with that. And, you know, that's been really great. And even our little town, you know, surprisingly has a lot of LGBT like business owners like in our town. So there's definitely, you know, support from other people directly around me.
Great. Dante, you hit on something too. I just had a conversation with one of my LGBTQ employees this weekend, and we were talking about pronouns and things like that. And she had mentioned, because I asked her, what kind of things can I do as a business owner to make people feel more comfortable? And one of the things she suggested was actually putting my pronouns on my emails. And I said, well, we have an area, an about area on our website too. And I said, well, we could also put them there and in some of our marketing. And she kind of relayed to me that that is a way of removing the stigma a little bit, where it's just, it's out there and people understand more. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's like what Steph mentioned earlier. There are some people, if you were to ask their pronouns, would probably get deeply offended. It could be something just in their belief system, or, you know, a lot of people feel like it's, you know, it's just utter nonsense. But for me, seeing someone who is okay with sharing their pronouns shows me that person is aware that I may have pronouns that are different from what they might think just from seeing me. Like I said earlier, trying to find safe spaces. If I see someone send me an email and they have their pronouns, and I'm like, okay, that person is at least, you know, I feel like I can be okay around that person because they're willing to share pronouns. Because for some people, it's a deeply personal thing to be asked what your pronouns are for some reason.
I actually went immediately and updated my pronouns on my email signature, and we're going to be updating the website. But I wanted to ask everyone in my shop, you know, what pronouns they preferred. So I didn't just want to assume.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as a business, I mean, something that we do, and again, this goes back to like our downtown pride that we did, you know, we gave businesses stickers, and, you know, ours is something with, it's the Middletown Pride logo, but it's everybody welcome, you know, so that's at the entrance of the door. So like, right as you walk in, you see that, then, you know, it's probably a safe space. And for me and my business, again, like going back to bathrooms, I mean, we have gender neutral bathrooms, just those kinds of things that you pick up on, it makes you feel comfortable. So
your NBDA membership helps support Bicycle Retail Radio. Go to nbda.com to join or renew your membership today.
That's a good transition, because what can business owners do? Like, I have a pride flag on my front door. Our bathroom sign says unisex. So want to make our shop open to everyone and make them feel comfortable. Some of the things that my shop does is every June, we do a Johnny Velo Bikes Pride shirt. And we do a different theme. This year it was Live Loud. And what we decided to do was we sold those shirts. I underwrote the costs. And we donated those funds to Kaleidoscope Youth Center here in Columbus, which deals with LGBTQ transgender.
Awesome.
I used to go there, actually.
Oh, did you really, Stephanie?
I even have this just sitting on my floor, Kaleidoscope Youth Center, little band. I don't know if you can
see. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I'm glad you were able to reap some of the benefits from that.
Kaleidoscope is a phenomenal organization, like really genuinely.
Good. One of the other things that we kind of do too is, because of COVID and COVID-related stuff, is we had the Clintonville, which is kind of an area of Columbus proper, we had our first Clintonville Pride ride this year, and it was a torrential downpour. And believe it or not, we had about 50 people show up in a torrential downpour. We were all soaked, but we rode through Clintonville with horns and bells and lights and everything like that as our first Columbus Pride ride. And it was interesting to see, too, when we announced that, other shops kind of came out with their own Pride rides as well, which I thought was great because the Pride parade here in Columbus attracts a huge number of people, but it's been canceled now for 2 years. One of the nice things about it was at the end of it, everyone was like, we want to do this next year. Please make sure you do this next year. And so, you know, it's something, a little tradition now that we've kind of kicked off, looking forward to it.
Hey, John, can I ask, are you planning to be in the Pride Parade next year?
I don't know if I'm planning to be in the Pride Parade. And here's the reason why, because I think it's become too commercialized.
I heavily agree with you there.
And they want a $500 donation just to participate in the parade as a business.
Wow.
So I would rather give the money to a smaller organization like Kaleidoscope. I have a gay son, and my family has gone to the Pride Parade. But as far as participating in that, I think it's just become way too corporate. And I'd rather do something on a more local level. Otto, how about yourself? What other kind of things do you do as a shop owner or other ideas that a shop owner can do?
That kind of like hits it for me, just really creating a safe environment for everyone when they come in. We started doing shirts for our store that it's only kindness spoken here. And honestly, oh, nice. I mean, it kind of covers all, it could be LGBTQ, but it really covers a whole range of topic, you know, so just really creating an open, inviting, safe atmosphere for everyone. Pride Month, you know, it's a good time, you know, you can like participate in events like that just to kind of show, you know, then for people to see that you're part of it. It's not just for that month. It kind of helps cover, you know, the whole year kind of a thing.
Dante, your shop did a Pride event too, didn't they?
We participated in a smaller one. I completely forget what we did because it was handled above me.
Was it a coffee ride or something?
So
or breakfast?
Like,
or?
Well, I personally run the coffee ride out of Bexley's store. So
okay.
For the entire Pride month, I called it Every Ride is a Pride Ride. So
okay.
But that's on the store level. I know at the company level, we haven't really done anything for a couple of years. Hopefully that is one of my things to try to change. And it's one of my passions of being in the bike industry this long is working on that inclusivity that's been sorely missing. Especially doing this for so long, I've seen how little the bike scene has really changed in terms of inclusivity and diversity. So, but yeah, hopefully moving forward, now that everyone's starting to get out now, hopefully we can do more related events in the future here.
I definitely think putting up Pride flags is helpful. It doesn't have to be just in June, just a rainbow flag and a trans flag. That's really all you need. Right. And then people are aware that, hey, this is almost certainly a safe space.
Yeah,
sure.
We do a rainbow sticker. It's kind of at the bottom of our door, and I probably should make it full face or something like that. But I have different flags that I bring out, and I do a pride flag. But you just mentioned the trans flag too. And could you kind of explain a little bit?
So the rainbow flag, oh God, I don't even remember my flag history. It was originally made Roy G. Biv, and then it had like a pink stripe. Now it's just the rainbow flag that everybody knows about. It's technically supposed to represent the entire LGBT community, but there are also sub-flags like the trans flag, the lesbian flag, the MLM flag, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
The lesbian flag is pink and orange. The trans flag is pink, blue, white, blue, pink, I think. I might have switched the pink to the blue. And it's just stripes. Yeah, it stands for the transgender community, essentially. It's our flag.
Stephanie, have you worked for employees before that do different types of pride events? Or
not really, actually. Like, the most I ever got was Kroger's, like, just wholesale commercial, like, pink washing. So that, it, like, I never really got to do any real events. Okay. And even at the sandwich shop with the two gay guys, it was still just not a big deal.
So let's talk a little bit more as a shop owner in the bike industry. And Dante, you as an employee as well, and Steph, you as a customer, because I remember, you know, you coming in multiple times. What are some of the issues someone in the bike industry is going to come across with an LGBTQ or transgender person? It could be bike selection, bike fitting.
Bike fitting is a tricky one. You know, like, I remember when you fitted me for my bike. It's a big bike. I didn't expect to need a bike that big, you know? Still glad that I have it, even though it's a giant bike. It is so comfortable to ride.
Well, because, it literally is a giant bike, Steph.
Well, yes, that too.
Yes.
But it's a big bike. And well, it's comfy to ride because it was properly sized, because
I remember specifically we had to go that route because you had very long legs.
I do have very long legs.
Yes.
I am, for the record, 5'11", so I'm a big girl.
Otto, have you had any situations or do you have any advice?
Personally, when I'm working with the customer, I mean, it's definitely just more, I try to just make it more about like, what kind of riding do you want to do? You know, like more on the riding side, what they're looking for to help them like choose the right bike and all of that kind of stuff. I've had to consult some guy friends when I get, you know, the questions from men about saddles and how should it, that brings been an awkward part for me because I, you know, and I kind of consult my good, close guy friends that to come up with an answer for that. Cause I can't speak from experience. So a little different, but people just, you know, assume that.
Okay. Dante, how about yourself?
I've been lucky being in the industry for so long. I've been to all the training for fitting and, you know, talking to people about clothing and stuff. And the big takeaways I took away from a lot of fitting stuff was to keep everything. I went to a Trek fitting school and the guy described it as, you know, talk to him like a doctor to a patient, keep everything very, you know, kind of sciencey and cut and dry. So like when talking to, you know, a woman or someone who's looking at a saddle, you know, you always refer to soft tissue, or I can't even remember the name of the, you know, the spot between, you know, that's like the no man's land, like we like to call the taint. there's an anatomical term for it that you would use to kind of keep everything kind of sterile. My big beef with, you know, I love Giant. I used to race for Giant a long, long time ago. But my big beef was when they split Giant and Liv up into two separate entities, saying, you know, Liv is women only. What I've been changing with my language in the last several years was keeping bikes gender neutral. That's a bike. You know, you happen to like the color purple? Let's go for it. Let's get you on a purple bike. Doesn't matter what it's called, you know, if it's called a Liv women's bike or whatever. And it drives me crazy. And Steph, the Giant rep, hears it from me every once in a while. It's like, why can't we just go back to just Giant bikes? So everyone just like gets on a bike and just rides.
Well, I think there might be some women out there that appreciate it.
Right. Yeah. And then
from a sales standpoint, I can understand because I've had times where I've had guys come in and they just don't, you know, shorter men just sometimes don't feel comfortable on the men's version or the Giant bike and move over towards a Liv bike because it feels better to them. So
yeah, and then Liv has been kind of getting better with, I hate to use the term girly, but for a long time, the paint jobs were just every female trope you can think of, you know, leaves, flowers. Like, oh my gosh, come on.
Yeah, like, it's like,
bike.
Yeah, I do want pink and purple on my bike.
Right.
But there's not a pink and purple bike in my size.
Exactly.
But godforsaken reason. I don't understand.
I've actually had fathers storm out of the store when I'd have a child who, for all intents and purposes, is a boy from just the way they're dressed and the way they're being addressed, wanting what is, you know, considered a quote-unquote girl's bike. The last conversation I had once was a little boy wanted a green bike and dad was just not having it because green was a girl's color. And his wife...
Oh, that's new. I didn't know that.
Yeah, same here. You know, it's new to me. And, you know, I've been an artist for a while. But mom politely pushed back against Dad, saying if that's the color he wants, colors don't have any gender. And he kind of stormed out the store. And she looked at me and she goes, I'm correct, right? I'm like, yeah, last time I checked, blue and yellow didn't get together and make green. I mean, the colors are genderless. Kid wants a green bike. Let's get him on a green bike.
I do experience that too. I just had that happen to me this weekend with a 12-inch kid's bike. And the little boy wanted the more girly one. And the grandparent was not having it. Right. And wanted an alternative. And I showed her an alternative. And the boy kept saying, even after he looked at the other, he wanted the other. And she was like, well, no, we're going to get this other one. You know, she forced that onto the boy. So
you walk that fine line between, you know, trying to educate people on things like that. But like I said before, I just try to keep everything as gender neutral as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm just here to put you on a bike that makes you happy. If it happens to be the color you love, hey, let's go for it. Bikes are bikes. Let's keep it fun. So.
Otto, have you had any different experiences or?
Nothing that like jumps out at me. I mean, personally, I would think at least some of the brands that I've been working with, you know, a lot of the colors have, at least in the past few years, kind of been more gender neutral. And, you know, really like you hear a lot more of like maybe older generations where like someone would come in and be like, a bike with a slanted top too, like, well, that's a girl's bike. And it's like, well, not really. I mean, if it's an older person that can't swing their leg over the saddle, they need to step through
it. It's a freaking bicycle. Like, yeah.
So, oh my you know, goodness. I just try to, and that's kind of where it's, you know, when I talk to customers, it's like, what kind of riding are you going to do? What kind of bike do you, you know, it's more of like their riding style. And yeah, I mean, I've definitely had men ask for a step through because they're like, I can't swing my leg over the bike. You know, so just kind of keeping with that. I mean,
yeah, those like, mixed,
just got people on bikes.
Those mixed and mid-step frames at one time were considered more feminine. And you're right. A lot of older people these days are, I can't get my leg over. And so I want something that's a little easier to get off and that sort of thing. So I remember I had a guy that was 6'4" wanting a step through. Try and find a step through for a 6'4" person. It's not easy. Nope. You know, yeah. No. So that was a really good point as well. Reaching, you know, the top of our hour here. Does anyone else have any suggestions or things they'd like to say either to shop owners, knowing that, you know, this is going out to the bicycle industry. There's a lot of shop owners. There is a lot of industry companies, bike manufacturers that listen to our podcasts. Any advice you guys might want to give them?
Make more sizes of bikes. Don't split up sizes of bikes by gender. To bike manufacturers, that is my genuine request. I think it's
drives me bonkers.
Yes. Okay.
It's not just for transgender people. That's just everyone. Because what if a really buff, muscular 6'4 guy comes into your shop and is like, I'd like the purple bike, please. Like, he can't get that right now. That's ridiculous. You don't have to cater to stupid gender stereotypes. That's dumb. That is my advice.
Otto?
To the industry, like, as a whole, I mean, I think we've seen, like, a lot of, like, the bigger companies start to go out and, like, maybe state, you know, their stance on things and just mm-hmm. to continue educating their employees and educating everyone. From my personal experience, like the cycling community that I was around when I transitioned was so supportive. I mean, I was racing then, you know, and it wasn't a big deal. You know, the one year I was racing in the women's field and I took a little break and came back and I was racing in the men's field and no one had an issue with it. And everyone, you know, was great. You know, that was my personal experience. And I think that we can make that the experience for other people if we just continue educating people.
I think we're starting to see that more too. Nika has an other category as well. And that's for kids 6th grade through 12th grade, I believe are the ages that they have. Ohio just had their inaugural season. I actually have a transgender 6th grader on the Nika team that I sponsor. Has had no issues, anything like that, which I think is great. I think it's becoming more acceptable within the school systems and things like that, too. The other thing I would say, too, is if you go back a few years and you look at Bicycling Magazine, it was all white men, white women. You never had any ethnicities and things like that. And Bicycling finally got called out for it and came up and said, hey, we're going to represent other classes of people that are cyclists that we have been underserving. And if you look now at a bicycling magazine, there are photos of African Americans, and I don't know if they've done a lot with the LGBTQ people yet or not, but I guess I need to renew my bicycling magazine as well to stay on top of that. Dante, have you seen the industry trending too then?
It's getting better. So I have actually talked to Molly Cameron. If anyone knows, Molly Cameron came out as a transgender woman several years ago, a long time ago. One of the few transgender women to race UCI cyclocross in the women's and men's categories. But there was a lot of pushback when she was racing. So now she started her organization called Ride.org that is basically championing transgender rights and, you know, cycling and racing, obviously, because that's her passion.
What was that website again?
Ride.org. But it's changing. There's still, you know, we have all these laws being passed by, you know, boneheaded states. Kicking transgender athletes out of competition. And so far, I haven't seen anything, at least on the cycling side of things, of that affecting, you know, the cycling scene any. But
I believe we did have in Arkansas, some of the state legislatures.
Yeah, they passed legislation there, but like they just had a cyclocross race. But as far as I know, like those laws are only limited to like Arkansas schools, maybe. I don't know. I'm not really keen on the specifics. But I think it's like high school sports. You know, you're only allowed to participate in the gender you were assigned at birth, that sort of thing.
Which is insane, by the way, completely deranged. And you have the laws in Florida where a school administrators, if your kid is challenged on their gender, school administrators will inspect their genitals.
Right, they're allowed.
Which is absolutely, what does that say about Florida school administrators other than that it's a little, little gross, kind of disgusting, revolting, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah, but from a store employee, I guess as a customer sometimes, the big takeaway is, you know, transgender people don't want to be treated differently. They just want to be treated like human beings. I mean, it's this whole kindness aspect.
That's a very, very good point.
You know, if you see a transgender person, don't like make a parade out of it. We just want to be normal human beings. That's all it is. And you know, people with their crazy belief systems want to make it out more than something it's not. So,
You know, I have to tell you this. I had a former employee who felt the need that he needed to bring up a person's sexuality every time they came into the shop.
Right. And it's super awkward.
I talked to him about it this a number of times, and two women came into the shop. And he immediately found out, oh, they're new to the area, blah, blah, blah. He starts going in, and they had not mentioned one thing about their sexuality, preferences, anything like that. Oh, I want to let you know, Columbus is the San Francisco of the Midwest, and it's very...
Oh, no.
You know, Steph, you know who I'm talking about, I think.
Is it who I think it is?
Yes, it is. So.
Oh, no. That explains a lot.
I cringed while he was saying this, and they left. And I went and I talked to him and I said, why do you continue feeling you have to bring up how woke you are or how accepting you are? All they want to do is come in and shop. They don't want to go into a dissertation about their sexuality. And believe it or not, I got a Facebook message that evening from that couple. And they said that they had felt very uncomfortable with the whole situation.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it. I totally agreed with him. I felt uncomfortable. I watched it unfold. And he had good intentions. He wanted to make them feel comfortable. But in bringing it up and pointing it out to them, that made them feel uncomfortable. And it's like you said, you just want to be treated as anyone else.
Right. That's one of the, you know, my therapist told me a good barometer to use when talking. If you feel like you're going to say something like that is like, would it make you feel uncomfortable if you were to ask yourself that? And again, that's where, you know, I've been trying to watch what I say and trying to be more cognizant of how I talk to people. And for transgender people, it could be a dangerous situation if you were to just point it out and blurt it from the mountaintops with good intentions that mm-hmm. this person's transgender. There's a lot of violence towards transgender people right now, and it's not safe to be pointed out or outed like that in public. So, but yeah, it's just, again, just treating people like people is all we ask for. So.
Well, thank you. I want to thank every one of you for having the courage and the honesty to come on and talk about making our industry better and understanding transgender people better. It's been a pleasure. Otto, first time I've met you, want to come down to your store and have a margarita or something like that as well. Boy, bikes and booze, that's two of my favorite things. Stephanie, from a customer standpoint, I want to thank you for allowing us to have the opportunity to serve you. And Dante, I wish you luck in your continued transition and
thank you.
Moving forward. And thank you, everyone. I think this has been a really good conversation.
Thank you.
Awesome. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
This has been Bicycle Retail Radio by the National Bicycle Dealers Association. For more information on membership and member benefits, join us at nbda.com.